Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department that backs it all up. Every step of the way. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. It's only the 24th in the history of the game.
Grounded to third. Y los Yankees ganan el juego 11-0. ¡Ay, papá! ¡Qué clase de salida para Domingo Germán!
It's the first Yankee play-by-play call I ever heard that made sense. All right, that was our good friend.
No, señor! No, señor!
It's our good friend Ricky Ricardo with the call at the end on Spanish radio. And am I going to remember where I was on June 28th, 2023? No, I mean, I went to Hazleton, but no, I'm not going to remember. I really don't care.
I was asleep.
We'll always remember. Well, it's happened on this show, too, for you. All right, so...
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Do we have Matt?
We got him right here.
There we go. Matt Lombardo joins us, NFL Network. Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Steve, great to be here. But I will say Ricky Ricardo is a good friend, but also a tough act to follow. What a call that was.
Isn't he spectacular, whether it's the Eagles or the Yankees. He's first class all the way. Four NFL players are suspended, three indefinitely. And then Nicholas Petit-Frere from Tennessee did not gamble in the NFL, but evidently must have done it somewhere around the workplace or on the road or whatever. The rules to me are black and white, and I know they're posted everywhere, Matt. Is this just the NFL just trying, you know, that these guys are A, doing it, but B, they've got to make examples and they're doing it?
Yeah, Steve, I'm not sure that the rules are as black and white as you and I might presume them to be. Obviously, it seems like it would be common sense not to bet on your own games or bet on NFL games. But players are allowed to gamble on casino games online or playing cards or whatever. I think what surprises me most is that players not only are betting on NFL games, but you see the bets that Isaiah Rodgers has placed. A lot of these were for $25, $50 parlays, $1,000 prop bets, really insignificant amounts of money when you talk about the grand scheme of things and what they're risking by placing these bets. And I'm also surprised that agents haven't been more aggressive in terms of telling their players, listen, yes, it sounds hypocritical for the NFL to be, you know, flooding the airwaves every commercial break with multiple commercials for their sportsbook partners and this, that, and the other thing, but you cannot, and I can't stress this enough, not bet on football. The fact that those things are happening, I think are what surprises me the most about this storyline.
Because it's interesting, you talk about the amount of the bets, which is interesting. And I was saying that, Matt, to my class, when I've asked them about, you know, and I said, look, you don't want to participate, don't participate. How many of you gamble? These are college students. Usually two-thirds of the hands go up. So just out of curiosity, I said, how much do you bet? And some of them are betting between 200 and 1,000. And Matt, I'm completely taken aback.
Yeah, you and I both, because you talk about a college student who, you know, might be trying to scrounge up beer money for the weekend. $200 to $1,000 on sports bets is a pretty hefty amount of money. I just find it very fascinating that when you think about NFL players, or even if you're on a veteran minimum contract, you're probably making $650,000 or more, not to mention guys that have been in the league with tenure making multi-million dollars. It's just shocking and surprising to me that they would be risking that, placing a $25 or a $50 or a $100 bet. But it also, I think, goes to show you the competitive nature for some of these guys, that they might not be chasing the dollar amount. They might be chasing the feeling of winning, which they get on Sundays, but certainly this is another way to chase that high, so to speak, by placing bets on games. But I am really surprised that it wouldn't be common sense to players, as much as it is for you and I, not to be betting on NFL games, let alone their own teams during the season.
The one that strikes me, though, if I have a problem with the NFL rule, it's that you're not allowed to place, like, you're sitting in the locker room or somewhere in the facility and, oh, by the way, you know what, I'm going to put some money on the NBA game tonight. Maybe make a prop bet on what LeBron might score, whatever. Right? And because you're in the facility, you can't do it. And, like, that part makes no sense, because in Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA, you can.
Yeah, no, I agree there. And I'm also surprised at how much that's happening around the NFL, because as somebody who's covered the league for years and has been in multiple team facilities, it used to be, now this might have changed over the last two or three seasons, but even sites like Vegas Insider or any sort of fantasy sports section of ESPN or Yahoo Sports, any site that's tangentially linked to gambling was blocked on Wi-Fi in the facility. So whether it's players just, you know, flipping the Wi-Fi off their phone and going over cellular networks to place these bets, I'm just surprised that it's happening as frequently as it is. But I agree with you. If sports betting is legal in your state and you're betting on the NBA or betting on college football or betting on Major League Baseball, I don't know that that's a suspendable offense. But I do understand, to a degree, the NFL trying to root out gambling within the locker room and root out the culture, so that it doesn't become a situation where a guy's betting on NBA games and all of a sudden slides into betting on NFL games. But definitely a situation where the NFL, as you said at the top of the conversation, I think they need to make an example of these guys to prevent it from becoming a stronger part of the culture within the league.
Well, so far the key to me is no big names have been suspended. I mean, that's the big part to me. I mean, Jameson Williams is still not a big name in the league, and he got suspended for six games. But there are no big names that have been suspended. This is not Paul Hornung, Alex Karras. They were big names when they were suspended.
Right. I don't know Calvin Ridley from a year ago, though, being suspended for a full year. There's a guy who's a 1,000-yard receiver, yeah, was one of the faces of the Atlanta Falcons.
But he wasn't playing at the time.
True. Very true. Very true. But still, he's a big name, and I think that maybe having these big suspensions come down might be a step in the league cracking down on gambling within the locker room and within the facilities, for sure.
This is an interesting time of the year, because this is one of the few times, Matt, where not a lot is going on. The NFL owns the cycle the other 11 months out of the year. So what's this time of the year like for you?
Yeah, Steve, it's funny. People ask me all the time about the off season and my part of the job in this time of year. It's kind of like the rest of the entire league seems to go on vacation, right? Coaches, scouts, this is the time the players get away before training camp starts. So for me, the content still needs to keep flowing. So it's a lot of preview stories, a lot of, you know, lists ranking players for the upcoming season. You sneak away when you can. Maybe you sneak off to the golf course to play nine midway through the afternoon. But it's kind of just like within the league, it's kind of the one chance out of the year from the middle of June until the middle of July when camps open up to kind of just take a breath, recharge, and get ready for the marathon that is training camp through the NFL draft.
Because people ask me at this time of the year, like, what do you do? And I literally have the schedule. Now, football's easy. Basketball's not out yet. But, I mean, I have it. And, you know, I'll say, hey, look, I'm already prepping for the upcoming season. That way, when I get to the week of games, I've got basics already done. And it helps me, you know, makes the work week go quicker for me in a lot of ways because I already took care of the basics. So you have to do all that preview stuff. So what are a couple of things that have you worked on that you know that will have some staying power for you when you put it out?
Yeah, I think the one that I really enjoyed, we put it out about a week ago when I left for vacation, went ahead and I predicted the next first-team All-Pro for every position in the league. The caveat is that these guys couldn't have been first-team All-Pros at any point in their career, but have a good chance of doing so in the upcoming season. So that was a lot of fun to put together. And then coming up in the next couple of weeks here, we're going to be releasing our top five players across the league by position. Those are always a lot of fun, especially when you talk about the quarterbacks and the running backs and the wide receivers, the sexy skill positions that people really care about. Yeah, a good chance to spark some debate, maybe stir up some controversy with some of the selections. But, you know, stories like that certainly are a lot of fun. They fill the calendar, and they have some staying power because it's the type of content that people are looking for all throughout the preseason and the run-up to the regular season getting underway.
How do you view the Saquon Barkley situation right now?
Yeah, you know what, Steve? That's a fascinating one because you talk to people inside the league, and I had an executive tell me that is a contract squabble that's probably going to get done close to training camp. But I do think it's really interesting that when Saquon Barkley came out at his annual youth camp and basically hinted at the idea that he would consider sitting out and holding out the entire season, that within 24 hours, the report surfaced on NFL Network that the Giants had put their original contract offer back on the table. So that felt like Saquon kind of grabbing back some of the leverage in these conversations. But I think that, you know, I wrote about this about 2 weeks ago. You look at what's happening at the running back position. Dalvin Cook, former All-Pro, 1,300-yard rusher a year ago, in the prime of his career, something like 29 years old, just gets released from the Minnesota Vikings. So look at Saquon Barkley, career year with a coaching staff that finally knows how to utilize him and get the most out of him. And he's on the franchise tag, certainly can't get top dollar at his position. And across the league, you know, you look at the spend on running backs, obviously the position is down, but there are seven teams who have a payroll at the running back position that is at the same level or lower than what they pay their kicker. So I just think it's really fascinating to watch how a position is completely devalued. And if I were Saquon Barkley and if I were his agents, I would do everything I could to get every guaranteed dollar that I can on this contract, because who knows what the future is going to hold on that next deal, if there even is a next deal that comes along 2, 3, 4 years down the line.
So why devalue of running backs? You're talking about it's hard to find 1,000 to 1,500 yards from scrimmage out of anybody. Why the devaluation of running backs in your personal opinion?
I think, Steve, it comes down a lot to teams are going to the backfield by committee approach, that you need to have two, maybe three running backs who you might not be getting 1,500 yards from scrimmage from one guy and putting one guy through the workload of 25, 30 carries per game, but you might look at a Philadelphia where you have a Boston Scott and a DeAndre Swift and multiple running backs who can get the job done. You look at Dallas, certainly they moved on from Ezekiel Elliott, and they seem comfortable moving forward with Ronald Jones and Tony Pollard once he gets healthy. I think you're going to start continuing to see teams deploy two, three running back committees rather than invest a significant chunk of the cap in one guy who, with all of the history of declining production after the age of 30, after all of the history of injuries at that position, that if you can spread around the workload and the wear and tear and spread around the money, then you're not going to be in a position where you're investing a significant chunk of your cap on one position that might not make the same impact as a quarterback, a cornerback, a wide receiver, or an edge rusher.
Interesting. I mean, do analytics play a role in how teams view running backs?
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of the conversation, Steve, but I think a lot of it just is looking at the career trajectory of future backs. I mean, you look at just taking Saquon Barkley as an example, the multiple high ankle sprains, the torn ACL. Running backs, they just get beat up. And
yeah,
once you get into the life of that second contract and on, there's a pretty significant history of guys' production declining. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with the approach of going to a backfield by committee, but I think that when you're looking at team building, the teams that are most successful are the teams that have dominant offensive and defensive lines, a franchise quarterback, and elite secondary play. I don't think that it's necessary to have that dominant running back as part of your offense if you're a Super Bowl caliber team, and if you can get by investing in two or three above average running backs rather than paying $10 million to a top five running back, I think teams are going to continue down that path and prioritizing those quote-unquote premium positions.
Wow. Interesting. Thank you so much, Matt. Really appreciate your time today. Enjoyed it.
Steve, always enjoyed the conversation. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, my friend. Yeah, it's interesting. The devaluation of running backs along the way has been a trend that's been interesting to watch. I still look at a guy like a Saquon Barkley and think, I want production. And to me, it doesn't matter where the production comes from, the position, the field. But he's right, because of the number of carries, you are going to get beat up more. Matt's absolutely right about that. I know. All I know is I watched two freshman running backs last year change a lot of things in the Penn State offense. But that's college. It's not the pros. By the way, your Yankees, IKF is homered, just so you know.
Oh, my almighty!
They're also 1-1, and I'd like to point out that maybe you're not aware of this, but it's the rubber game of the three-game series.
Correct, yes. It was a 2-1 loss to begin the series before last night, yeah.
Hmm. Wow. This team's barely single-A. How did you lose to them?
The only thing that makes me feel better about it is they beat Tampa 2-3 not too long ago, so... But still unacceptable, regardless.
I can just see you coaching Little League now. This is going to be a riot. I can't wait to go to a game. Yeah, it's good. Good call. Yeah. You thought it was a good idea bringing in Junior, did you? That's good. That's really enjoyable. Where's the concession stand? We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake, a service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
To know about your gambling problem?
She's actually been with me during the few times that I actually have gambled. And there have been a few times that I've won and then I've stopped. There's only one time where I kept going and I lost all the money, and then that was it after that. From that point on is when, as soon as I'm feeling pretty good, I find a stopping point and I just take my winnings and move on.
What an example to America you are.
I try.
Oh, boy.
I'm a big slot guy. When I do gamble, I like the slots.
Okay. Hey, it's your money. You can do whatever you want with it. That's what I tell the kids in the class. It's just, everybody's different. It's just, it has never once been my bag. Never. And that's just me, though. That's not me holding judgment over everybody else. I let you do that.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour here on the Steve Jones Show. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Neil Coolong joined us on the show Tuesday, talking some Hard Knocks and other off-season topics with the NFL, as we talked a little while with Matt Lombardo. It's that time of the year where things are a little bit slow, so that's how we got into the Hard Knocks conversation and a couple other topics with Neil earlier this week.
As always, it is an extraordinary pleasure to be here. Hope you guys are doing well out there.
All right, so Hard Knocks. I know Shannon Furman. She is part of the crew that does this, and they do great work with it. What is the reluctance on the part of now, obviously, many teams to about whether they want to be on Hard Knocks or not? Because I know Shannon and the crew, I mean, they're not sitting there trying to get anybody.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of different angles to this. My gut would be coaches and, to whatever degree, players don't want the cameras around because they don't want to get clowned. You know, they don't want to have that viral moment. Because,
right,
believe me, there are people that are watching the show specifically for that, for the sake of creating content. And it's, I'm not totally clear on the rules, but obviously the players aren't getting direct cuts for their participation with the show. So there's ample marketing that is done off of them in moments that are in the show when they need to be, you know, focused on what they're doing. From the coach's perspective, it's a distraction. There are other things there. It's something to take the players' minds off of the task at hand. At the same time, I would offer up that because of the rules that are in place, what it's really saying is you qualified for this. It's not really right. A good thing to be qualified for it. So call it a loser's badge, if you will. If you're on the show, that means that you failed to meet a bunch of standards that would otherwise say that you had, to some degree, a successful season the year before. Also, add in the fact that I don't think anybody would do well with their fan base, all of those things considered, to say they're excited about the opportunity to do it. You know, right. I don't think that they want their fan base thinking that this is a good thing for them. They're better off coming off as, we don't want to do this. We won't know for certain. I am sure there are some factions within a team that don't mind it. I'm sure there are some players that see it as an opportunity. But to your point, you kind of alluded to this. If you watch it, especially now, they're focusing on, you know, it never will be. You know, a lot of these guys, the competitions that they're talking about are fringe roster spots. They're practice right. squad spots. We've gotten to know the international player on like the last four teams on Hard Knocks. Those are guys that if not for the extra space created for them, wouldn't be on the team at all. So they're not really putting the stars to a whole lot of work, and I think that's something that's been kind of weeded out in the last, I don't know, four or five seasons of it. If I looked at a roster of it, I could probably tell you when it's started to slide away from it. But it's an entertaining show. It's a good show. It doesn't get you as in-depth a look as what's probably real. But at the mm-hmm. same time, I get why coaches, general managers might not want the cameras around when they're trying to do stuff. I'm not entirely sure it's, you know, it's pretty soft. They're not really going after stuff. I mean, it's been since James Harrison was like actively, you know, borderline assaulting the cameraman to get away from him that we've seen, you know, mm-hmm. kind of controversial types of stuff. It's pretty vanilla. It's not real edgy right. anymore. You know, you're not really seeing that. And a lot of the guys that are in there, you love hearing about them, but the next time you hear about them is when they get cut, and then they might get signed somewhere else during the season mm-hmm. by somebody else, and you're not thinking about them going into the next season. So it's not like this is real, you know, incredibly high-end NFL talent sharing parts of themselves during that process.
Well, what's interesting is that Bill O'Brien, when the Texans were on it, well, Bill's up there talking and at practice discussing the way I always saw Bill talk and discuss, okay, when it came to situations like that. And then I remember I was talking to him. I said, hey, how do you think of what? He goes, Jonesy. He says, my mother saw the first one. She says, what are you talking like that for? Because mom isn't in practice. So, you know. But you're talking about the reason they focus on the stories you're talking about is those are the compelling stories as to whether somebody makes it or not. I already know Aaron Rodgers has made the team. I don't have to worry about that. Right? They're trying to come up with a story.
Yeah, telling the story of it, I think, is, and that's something I think that's changed with the production that HBO has put in charge of it. I can't disagree with that. You do need to have some type of conflict, some kind of drama there. And they've done a good job highlighting the human element, I think, a lot of it. If you really want to get to know the NFL, you have to see all of it, in my opinion, because we've discussed this many times. Within the NFLPA, the Players Union, you're looking at a massive delta of really any type of human qualification you can think of. There's the difference between the highest paid and the minimum is enormous. Age range is probably 18 years, something like that. Experience, obviously, is vastly different. You put all that, the microcosm of that within a team creates a huge you know, I don't know if imbalance is the right word. I don't want to suggest it's a negative thing, but there's a lot of different things that are going on. You're catching a lot of different people at different points of their lives. They're going after the undrafted rookies, which I don't think it's a coincidence. You're seeing more and more undrafted rookies making rosters coming out of training camp nowadays. You kind of see how they became who they were, at least you know what the producers are selecting to put on the screen. And it does create that sense of, you know, will they or won't they, the drama that comes with, you know, making a roster. I think that is compelling. I do enjoy watching that. At the same time, though, I remember, you go back to the Cowboys year, which I feel was probably the most overly orchestrated of all of them. They right. did provide some good insight into Dak and Zeke Elliott's friendship. You got a little bit from Dak. He was injured, but you saw really just how, you know, competitive he was, how single-minded he was. And most of that was because he was trying to avoid all of it. You know, you could see where that comes from. And it gave you some good insight into McCarthy's position. You know, I took from it that Jerry Jones really is in charge of just about everything. So
yeah,
it kind of
exactly.
confirmed what everybody yes. already knows. And
yeah.
you can get some good stuff almost in an unintentional way, and it really depends on you know, when the cameras are on. And to be honest with you, that's not all that much different than working camp as part of media. There are things that you might see but you can't really report on, and there are things that happen that you can that the team can't really control. So there's kind of this sense of chaos combined with you know, a good amount of story opportunity from an eclectic group of people who are all there mixed together in you know, oppressive heat and combative conditions. It can make for some good storylines, and you know, some have been better than others, but you always appreciate the production value that goes into it.
Well, I know they always appreciate whatever cooperation they get, because it does make the production for Shannon and her crew a lot easier. And the crew has been here for, geez, that same crew has been here several times for their rookie, you know, welcome, hey rookie, welcome to the NFL. So I mean, I've seen them around for that, to do that as part of the group. This is a time of year where this is about as slow as it gets. This is about the only time of the year the NFL does not dominate the cycle. Right now, it's the NBA and Major League Baseball. How important is it for the NFL just to have a little time to breathe before they dominate again?
I think two parts to it. I think that if they had something they could do in June, they would.
Yeah. Yep.
That said, the people who might not agree with that are gone. They're on vacation. Their news doesn't break because people aren't doing it, because they are taking, you know, really the last breath of quasi free air before, you know, their world becomes extremely narrow, extremely specific to the job that they have to do. And I'm really talking more about the front office. You know, players yeah. do it as well. You look around social media. You see them, you know, this is when they take their trips. They're in Europe. They're in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
You get the sense that usually because it's fans screaming about why they're not in the gym working out at that particular moment, which is, you know, always kind of fun to see. It's their one opportunity to say, look, all right, we've drawn up everything we're going to drop. We can wait and make decisions on this for another time. You know, yes, there are still good players who are out in the market, and it's not that
yes.
teams are completely asleep at the wheel. It's just more like, why bother signing them right now? We have camp in a month. There's nothing that's going to happen between now and then, except, and I don't mean this negatively, but except for them to get hurt. So do we want to be liable for this now, or at the very least get them into camp where they have a professional reason to have gotten hurt? You know, we might be on the hook for it then, but it's better than them, you know, breaking their ankle, falling off the sidewalk before they even step foot on the field. They're not going to make a move now. So now, I think, is not that it's necessarily, you know, organized this way, but there seems to be very much an understanding that this is the time of the year everyone kind of shuts it down and moves away. That said, I think, you know, humanistically, yeah, they probably need to do that. I think too, it's a good time for fans to not be plugged in and to not kind of grasp at straws. We got over the draft hangover probably in May.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of excitement that comes from that. It's fun to see them in minicamp. You see them in teams' practice jerseys and the helmet for the first time. There's some value to that. And then there kind of just comes a point where it's like, we can't really push the envelope here anymore. You know, let's just wait on it, because all of this stuff we'll notice come preseason that it's nonsense compared to the real football that's going on. And then come week one, week two, week three, we'll see that the preseason was kind of nonsense compared to what everything is. So yeah. I think to make those to make those kind of tent poles increase in strength, you have to have a dead moment where everything just sort of resets. I think that's where it is. This is really more of an audience attention thing than anything else. So it coincides well with a time period in which they can all just kind of say, look, you know what, let's just take a couple weeks off, or, you know, whatever that happens to mean. We don't have anything specific going on here. We can deal with internal stuff. We can deal with long-reaching stuff, more so than we can about roster personnel, media-facing type of thing, and just kind of get ready for what it's going to be, which is, you know, total chaos come late July.
Something's going to happen on July 11th that has not happened in 4 years, and that is there's going to be a supplemental draft. The supplemental draft over the years, Bernie Kosar, Terrell Pryor, people like that. There's only one player in this thing, and that is Milton Wright, a wide receiver from Purdue who was academically ineligible this past season. If you use a fourth-round selection in the supplemental draft to take him, you will then lose a fourth-round pick in the 2024 draft. That's how it works. He's the only guy in it. Do you think somebody will take a flyer on him?
Every year this comes up, and I have gotten so hypnotically obsessed with this answer. I'll be honest with you, I didn't even realize they didn't have a supplemental draft the last 4 years. I know that we talk about it
every
year.
That's why I'm here.
Usually, you bring up whoever the player is, and that's when you start looking into whoever the player is, because, let's be honest, if a guy that's facing academic suspension didn't go pro, there's probably a reason. So you look at it from the perspective of this has to be a pretty high-level guy if you want to spend a future pick on him right now, because you're essentially trading for that player. And on top of that, you're improving the rest of your competition, because that cuts a pick out of the round. Is he worth having on your team going into camp now? He has not been through minicamp. You don't know anything about him personally. You haven't, you know, if he had not declared for the draft, you didn't meet with him. You didn't interview him. There has to be a compelling reason for you to want to go get him. Now, the question is this guy Josh Gordon? I don't think so.
And he was a supplemental draft pick.
I don't know who he is. Yeah, I would say no. Just flat bottom line, no.
I agree.
I know it has been, granted, you know, things might have changed within the Steelers organization, but it was, you know, kind of silent standard operating procedure. They were never going to take anybody in the supplemental draft. They don't care who They were not going to take anybody. I'd expect that streak to continue now. It's fun coming up with kind of tongue-in-cheek content to surround the supplemental draft. Usually it's a look back at it, and there was a point in time in which when you had the break-off with the USFL, and there was a lot of decisions to be made, and there was legitimate competition back and forth, the supplemental draft made a bit more sense than it probably does today. I see the value of it, but I almost feel like they're not able to shoehorn it in at a better time, but where it is, the placement of it almost seems to me more like the NFL really doesn't want to actively try to poach players from college.
That's right.
The supplemental draft happening after minicamp really just says you don't have a chance. You have to have a really strong reason to not go back to school, whatever that happens to be, but by and large, the team isn't going to waste a pick on a guy that gave up his college eligibility, and nobody else is going to waste a pick on anyway. He's an undrafted free agent then. Going back to what I said before, that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing. So a lot of these guys are still going to end up, you know, he's probably at best a practice squad player as a rookie, or that's where he's going to get his start. Not a bad place to be anymore. So why spend the pick on him? There's a lot of guys you have in some way, shape, or form, at least one, if not two, other professional leagues that are going on. You know, the Steelers have, what, five guys going into camp that they signed from a minor league this past spring season. So there are a lot more opportunities. There aren't maybe as many roster positions as there are, but there are always a ton of injuries. I think there's value to going into the supplemental draft, but it's not the supplemental draft that matters. It's the fact that they are declaring their eligibility to go pro. They'll probably end up in camp somewhere if somebody doesn't take him. But I don't think a team is going to waste an asset on him this late into the whole process.
And to be honest with you, he's better off being a free agent anyway. He'll have more options. He'll have more options than being the fifth round supplemental pick of some team. I mean, to be honest.
At that point, I mean, salary wise, it's going to look good, but that salary doesn't matter unless you make the team.
Right.
Wouldn't you rather have the opportunity to choose the team that you can make as opposed to, you know, a bad decision by somebody or whatever it is that's going to happen?
Right.
You may as well have control at that point. And that's, you know, it goes back to Vontaze Burfict in, what was that, 2012, I think it was? He went undrafted. Yeah. You know, first-round talent went undrafted. He had, I think he had like 20 offers. He could have, you know, chosen anywhere that he wanted to go. He picked the one that gave him the best opportunity to make the team and to play. And he started as a rookie. Just kind of a bizarre situation all around. But I think that's a model of how players can look at it and say, if I'm not going to get drafted, Lael Collins was the same way. You know, if I'm not going to get drafted in round one, don't draft me at all. I want to pick where I'm going to go, and then we can negotiate a contract from there. It makes more sense. Right? That might be optimistic. You know, you need a little bit more scratch. You know, not everyone's Lael Collins in the situation that he faced.
Yeah.
But
right.
you can see why it might make more sense for a player to enter the supplemental draft, even if it isn't the draft itself that's important. It's the fact that you are declaring yourself a free agent in the NFL pool.
It'll be July 11th. We will have no coverage of it. All right, but enjoy your holiday weekend, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Neil Coulong from earlier in the week. And we got breaking news from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. The Sixers and James Harden are now exploring trade scenarios. James Harden is picking up his $35.6 million option, and both sides are beginning to work together in exploring trade scenarios. It's expected Harden has played his last game for the Sixers. The Clippers and Knicks are expected to be among the teams that will engage with the Sixers on a potential James Harden trade. So we'll get into that in a little in a couple minutes here as we take our last break, and we'll get into that a little bit as we wrap up on a Thursday on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Yeah, so there you have it. James Harden looks like he's done as a Sixer, as he'll opt in to his player contract, but then the Sixers are going to work with him for a trade. Likely, it looks like maybe the Clippers are the front runner, but the Knicks are also a possibility. Either way, I like the idea of moving on from Harden for the Sixers. They just got to make sure they get what they can in return, especially if it's inside a division. Talk to you tomorrow here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.